When you see people, you can also kind of keep a pulse on, like, maybe I didn't have like deep interaction, but I just kind of get a sense of like body language. Are they doing okay? You know, are they, how's life going? Are they frustrated with their role? Are they, things going well? Like you just lose out on a lot of that, just even kind of like water cooler, personal, just kind of hanging out stuff. And so there is an intentionality there that you have to do.
My name is Jake Thompson, your Chief Encouragement Officer, and this is the Compete Every Day Podcast, a show designed to encourage and equip you with the tools to build a winning mindset so you can build your winning life. Text podcast to 972-945-9113 to join our Morning Motivation Club, and visit CompeteEveryday.com for past podcast episodes and to learn more about our resources and gear for ambitious people who are ready to start winning. Welcome to the show. Good morning, competitor. Welcome to this episode of the Compete Everyday Podcast. I am incredibly excited to be able to welcome to today's show my old friend, Grant Baldwin. Grant and I go back well over a decade as we met, well, both while we were chasing different career paths. And since then, Grant has done some incredible work, including building the Speaker Lab, a multi-million dollar business with a virtual team. And so we talk about this pursuit he had, but more importantly, we talk about building culture within virtual teams. How do you emphasize, integrate, reinforce core values when you don't have that water cooler talk, when you're not face-to-face on a consistent basis? And so Grant breaks down what he's learned, what they've implemented, and there's a few takeaways you can put into practice immediately with your team, even if your team isn't a full-time virtual program. I have a chance to see some of this culture up close and personal because beginning in February of 2023, I came on part-time to their team as a coach. I do some of the coaching for their VIP accelerator for new speakers wanting to get involved in the Speaker Lab. And so I've seen this up close. I've seen their full-time team. I see how they engage. It's been really neat to see in terms of building a culture when you're not face-to-face and elbow-to-elbow every day. So get ready. You've got a great, great set of insights and action takeaways that you're going to get from Grant. As we dive into today's show, I want to encourage you, if you are in management, if you are a manager, director, leader, you've got people reporting to you, and you're just looking for ways to get better at it because sometimes you feel like you are drowning, I really want to encourage you to check out our competitor cohort. It is designed for you. We currently have a group of managers and leaders, and each week we're talking about different things from managing teams to managing ourselves. How do we better lead ourselves? How do we manage our self-talk? And how do we pour into others? How do we coach up our teams? How do we give them opportunities to grow and develop and rise throughout their career? And so if that's something you've been looking for, you feel like you have no idea what's going on in your leadership journey, and you're just kind of figuring it out as you go, stop trying to figure it out all alone and come join the competitor cohort to learn how you can get a competitive advantage in your career by becoming the leader you're capable of being. Now, let's get into today's show. I'm excited to introduce you to my friend, Grant Baldwin.
Grant Baldwin, welcome to the podcast.
Man, it's been a long time coming. I told you I've busted your chops on this. Like I'm a fan of you. I've been wanting to be on the show for a long time. And so finally, you know, I'm going to check this off my dream list. It's coming true.
We've known each other for about 12 years now.
It's a long time.
Man, it's been a long time. I actually have to go back into the archives to see if while pre-TSL, you were ever on the show. I really don't think you ever were. I think we talked about it
I've got my vision board right over here and your face is on it and I'm just waiting for this moment. And so this is like all my dreams are coming true right now.
Dude, I love it. So for those listening, like Grant and I have known each other for years. We met at Pioneer Nation actually, yeah. After Chris Brogan's keynote. Yeah. And then have just stayed connected. And it's been, for me, it's been a ton of fun watching you and I've had the opportunity to actually work with you on two sides, right? I went through the Speaker Lab that you built into this incredible business back in 2018, I think is when we looked at it, when I was first starting this part of my career. And then now is the opportunity to kind of be part of the team, as I laugh, as a VIP coach, sitting in on a few sessions a month, helping coach some speakers. And so it's it's fun getting all these angles of you. And when we talked about this, I wanted to get you on the show because the thing I really appreciate about TSL is the culture. And for people listening, what they may not realize, and I don't actually even know the headcount, you probably do, is this is a completely remote virtual company that you've built a really cool culture with. And so I want to talk a little bit about kind of some of the things you've been intentional with that. Before we do, give us kind of the backstory on the Speaker Lab, what you do today, and kind of how many people are involved in and around the business.
Yeah. So the nutshell is, I was a full-time speaker for several years. I did about 60, 70 gigs a year, really enjoyed it. And, you know, just like you, Jake, where you're a busy speaker right now, you get people who ask all the time, like, hey, I want to do that. You're a speaker. That's kind of cool. Like for most people, like we just didn't see it on the menu of options going back to, you know, high school or college and just trying to think through like, what do we want to do with our life? And speaking is one of those things that it's just it's a very aspirational career. It's a thing that a lot of people are intrigued by, but it's also kind of this got a certain aura and mysterious mystique to it of just like, yeah, but how do you do it? You know, do I have to be famous or do I have to have like have some crazy overcoming obstacle story or do I have to have conquered cancer? Like, how do I actually become a speaker? And really, there's just it's no different than a lot of things. Like, there's just kind of a methodology and system to it. And so there's some things that we kind of figured out on here's what you need to do to find and book gigs. And so that really evolved from me being a full-time speaker to teaching and working with speakers and kind of teaching primarily the business of speaking. How do you find and book gigs? What do you speak about? Who hires speakers? How much do you charge? Like, again, how does this mysterious black box work? And so so the business is we started in, I think, 2016. And we were a virtual company from the beginning. And then as the company continued to grow, then we were needing additional coaches and facilitators and people to work with the students. And so that's when you and I started connecting on that. We've stayed in touch, like you said, over the years, yeah, just about life and business and speaking. And so when we got to a point, I was like, man, Jake's killing it. Like, I'd love for him to come over and teach some of our students, like what he's doing, what's working. And so that's kind of evolved into what we do today. But yeah, from day one, we've always been a virtual company. And I think some of that just comes from, honestly, just like my own personal preference of I want to work from home. Like, I don't want to go to an office. I really enjoy being home. Jake, as you know, like, I'm married to my high school sweetheart. We have a great marriage. I've got three beautiful daughters. I like being home. You know, I'm just a homebody. And so purely selfishly, I don't want to go anywhere, you know? So I got all my people here. I want to stay here. And so that was a big thing that kind of led to creating a virtual company. And I know we'll talk about it, but there's like big pros and cons to having a virtual company. It really opens up the hiring pool of who could be a good fit for the company. Like literally like anywhere in the country could be, or the world could be a good fit.
John's in Spain.
Exactly. Yeah. We have a coach who's in Spain who flew all the way over for a team retreat we just had. But also like you know, the doing stuff over Zoom or Slack or email, like nothing compares to being in person. And so you lose a lot of that in-person quality time. So there's huge, huge pros and cons, but it's definitely, we've done some stuff that's made it work for us.
So one of the things before we kind of talk about cultivating that culture that I want to talk about, because I always find this really interesting. And you mentioned this maybe last year at the TSL retreat with one of your mentors about being a entrepreneur who speaks versus a speaker first. And You made a huge pivot in your career. And obviously I've made a pivot in mine. Yours is very different as well, but I'm curious, talk about that experience of the kind of the revelation that I'm good at this, but like, this is really what I want to do. And then having that courage to make that shift in your career, especially given the fact you're married, you have a family. There's a lot of people riding on your success with this decision.
Yeah. So I got to a point where I was doing, like I said, about 60, 70 gigs a year. And I really, really enjoyed it. Like, as you well know, like, speaking is incredibly fun. It's really, you get to travel, you get to meet awesome people, you get to be this like pseudo celebrity for a moment. And, you know, people want to, if you do a good job, they stand and cheer for you. And then they want to take pictures with you and get your autograph. And you're like, this is fun and weird and awesome, you know, and people pay a lot of money for this, you know? So on one hand, it's really, really fun. And on the other hand, I think I just kind of had this epiphany, like, speaking is a high paying manual labor job in that you get paid really well to do the thing that you do. But the nature of it is you have to get on a plane, you have to go somewhere, you have to show up, you have to do the thing. And so I think of it kind of like a surgeon. You know, a surgeon makes good money for what they do, but you got to show up and do surgery. You know, you don't own a business, you have a job. It's a great job. It's a cool job. It's a really, really fun job, but it's a job. And so this, what you're kind of alluding to is I had a kind of a mentor who I had this conversation with him, and he said something to the effect of, you know, like some people are born to be speakers, and he was definitely that guy. Like he absolutely loves speaking. You get to see him speak. He's a phenomenal, phenomenal speaker and great at what it is that he does. But he said, Grant, I think you're an entrepreneur who happens to be good at speaking. And that really clicked for me. Like that really resonated. And so I knew that as a speaker that there was, the whole thing was just built upon me. And so, I knew that if I wanted to, increase my impact or increase my income, I had to either do more gigs, which I wasn't really intrigued by, or, potentially just had to increase fees, which in the market that I was in at the time, I did a lot in the education space. I was kind of on the upper end of what I felt comfortable charging. And so, I didn't necessarily want to kind of start over in a different market or a different pond. And so again, the people asking all the time, like, I want to be a speaker. What do I need to do? Like, that was something I really enjoyed and something I felt like I'd figured some stuff out and, wanted to teach and train other people. So it was kind of a, I don't know that I ever had like this grand vision of like, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to make this big pivot and now it's going to become this big thing. And like, it was never that at all. Like all of this has wildly exceeded any expectations that I ever had. But I also know that, the Speaker Lab is a lot of like what I wish I had when I got started as a speaker. You know, when I got started, I'd done a little bit of speaking. I was a youth pastor for a minute. I felt like I could do this. I just needed someone to, again, show me what to do. You know, at the time, this was 18, 19 years ago. There were no podcasts or no books or no courses or no trainings. There was no coaches on this stuff. You know, you're just kind of like found myself just emailing other speakers, stalking other speakers, harassing them. Can I pick your brain? Can I buy you lunch? Sort of stuff. Just trying to learn something. And so in many ways, the Speaker Lab is like, oh man, I wish I had had this years ago when I got started, because I know there's so many other speakers who, you know, like you, Jake, who are just like, I think I can do this. I just need someone just to freaking tell me what to do. And so that's really, you know, the kind of what birthed the Speaker Lab.
Okay. Okay. So from day one, you love being at home, which obviously sounds a huge piece of, I don't really want to be on the road 60, 70, and then more gigs on top of that. How did you go about kind of outlining, because core values is so important with what you do and important for that. How did you start outlining that with maybe your first hire, your first couple of hires? Or did you kind of bring people over from your speaking business when you got started? Did you have anybody else in kind of helping you book the gigs, or from a contract standpoint, the back end admin work that you brought over into Speaker Lab to kind of start this?
Yeah, really good question. So when I was speaking full time, I had a full time assistant, Lisa. And so she worked with me for, gosh, 9-10 years or so. And so had her kind of transition over to kind of help me on some of that. But also, you know, booking gigs and kind of helping on the back end is different than, you know, selling coaching or training courses and just trying to figure out that whole world. And so especially early on, like we worked with a lot of freelancers, a lot of contractors, a lot of people who just specialize in one thing, and we're just kind of paying for that one thing. You know, can you come help with some type of tech thing that we need help setting up? Can you help with writing emails, or can you help with social media, or, you know, whatever the thing was? And so a lot of it for a while was that of just kind of like pulling together different pieces. And we were, we didn't make actually our first full-time W-2 employee hire until a couple years into the business. And we were doing multiple seven figures at that point. So we got to decent size with just a team of contractors, and that worked.
How did you decide to make that shift? Like from, hey, pulling apart, yeah, like different people, different, to say, hey, we actually need to be under one team.
Yeah. I don't know that there was necessarily like a conscious decision on it. A lot of it stemmed from a hire that we made. And so what happened was we'd had a team of contractors. And I was kind of that belief of like, oh, we can keep doing this. You know, like, I think we can keep growing this way. And then we, at the time we had a marketing contractor who, was leaving to go all in on his own thing. And so we needed to hire a marketing director. So we'd put out some, you know, job posting on this. We had a couple people apply. And our best option is the guy that we ended up hiring, Chris, that, you know,
yep,
who's still 4.5 years later, still our marketing director. And he was just night and day, better than everybody else we were looking at and talking to. And I was like, oh man, I know this is the guy that we need, but he wasn't a contractor. He was coming from a full-time gig. He wanted to be a full-time employee, which also meant like he's looking for, you know, benefits and, upside and yada, yada.
Yeah.
And so I was just like, wow, this is okay. We got to put on our big boy pants for this. It was a big, like just mental hurdle of, you know, paying like a six-figure role for him and knowing like, all right, I know this is the guy that we need, but also just like, this is a much different deal that we're committing to than what we've done historically. And so also, if you remember, for timeline, we started talking with him November 2019. We hired him January 2020. And, you know, within a few weeks, like the world is shuts down and the world just implodes. And so, you know, you got this all of a sudden payroll of this guy and his family who's dependent on you. And you're like, oh, crap, you know, what are we doing now? But I can look back now and I can say like hiring him was one of the best things that we've done in the business. He's had a remarkable impact on the business. Again, Jake, you've hung out with him. He's a great, great dude and has really made a big impact within the company. But I think there was also just like seeing here's the difference between a full-time employee who's all in on your thing versus like a contractor who you are one of a lot of things that they do. And you're probably playing second or third string, you know, to whatever their priority is. And there, again, there's pros and cons, there's trade-offs there. A lot of this kind of comes down to like what it is that you want to be doing, what it is that you want to be accomplishing as, you know, an entrepreneur and whatever it is that you're trying to do.
Now, Chris isn't there in Nashville, right? Chris, where's home base for Chris?
Yeah, so Chris, when we hired him, he lived in D.C., just recently moved to Atlanta. For context, in fact, when we talk about like a virtual company, he's kind of an extreme example of his wife's family are missionaries in Africa. And he has twice now gone over to South Africa for like a month or two. And so I remember when he first suggested it, he was like, hey, could I go work from Africa for like a month or two? You know, and you're like, I mean, we are a virtual company, but there's some significant time zone stuff. And it's kind of like, hey, if we can figure out the time zone things and, you know, you want to get up super early or stay up super late, whatever it works out to, like, okay, we'll make it work. And so, yeah, he went to Africa for two different stretches and we made it work. We've had people who have done an RV thing where they and their spouse have traveled around in an RV like on the weekends and they'll, you know, so I'll hop on a call with them or check in with them. It's like, hey, where are you at this week? And like, oh, we're in New Mexico and we're thinking about going to Montana next week and going to drive up there. And, you know, just like that type of life. And again, it's kind of like, hey, if you incentivize people well, if people have clear boundaries on, you know, what their responsibilities are, they have clarity within their role, then people will make that work. I think there's also, you know, one of the things people talk a lot about is they feel like a real autonomy and freedom and flexibility. And, you know, we don't want to micromanage people. We don't babysit people. You know, we don't need people to clock in and clock out. Like, treat people like adults, like do your job, get your job done. But if that means you want to, you know, get up early or stay up late or work from a coffee shop or work from your house or work from the road, like as long as you're doing a good job and it's not impacting your work, like give people that freedom and flexibility. And I would also say like, from a company standpoint, it absolutely helps with culture, but it also like, it makes a massive difference just in your overhead. You know, like you think about, you know, companies and like who have big offices and all the desk and furniture and snacks and just accessories that have to go into furnishing that place and just turning the lights on and just turning, like getting the machine pumping. That's significant overhead for a lot of companies. And so we have very little to none of that because we're a virtual company and people work from a place and situation that makes sense for them.
Yeah. So I want to ask actually about Chris's onboarding as the first one. How did you go into kind of onboarding him? And then talk to me a little bit about the process we have now in place. I kind of went through a very different version of it 2 years ago, but like when you're bringing in your full-time, the W-2s and full-time team, what is their onboarding process for that clarity on role, but also alignment in the culture and what we stand for?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's evolved significantly over time. And I think that this is no different than, you know, anything that, you know, the first time you do something, you know, you're going, I'm taking our best swing at this. So like with Chris and that very first onboarding of a W-2 employee, it's kind of like, yeah, this is new to me too. But I think this is what we're supposed to do, you know, and trying to get you up and running and, hey, what do you need? And I don't know what I'm doing either. And, you know, you're doing your best to just kind of get people up and going. Now, you know, having done it several years, we have a good team that helps with a lot of the onboarding. One of the things that I specifically do with every team member is when someone joins the company, is I do a call with them where I go through our values, our vision, the history of the company, our purpose, how I got into speaking, how that evolved into the Speaker Lab, and just try to paint the picture of like, hey, this is like, this didn't just magically happen. Like, here's how we got to this, and here's how we operate. Like, here's what how we think about things. And so I think it's helpful for people to hear that from the founder, the CEO, from me, of knowing like, no, like, this is how we want to treat you. And this is what we expect in return. We want to treat you like an adult. We want to treat you like that you've got a ton of freedom and flexibility and autonomy. We value you as a person. We value you as a human. Here's what that looks like. Here's what that means. And so there's several of those things that I will do early on. And I hear this all the time from new team members who have said, you know, I've heard you guys talk about your culture and I thought it was good, but I was also kind of skeptical coming into it. And then I kind of got to see on the other side of the curtain and it's like, oh dang, like actually people legitimately care about one another and care about the work that we're doing. And, you know, there is like a true culture here. You know, I think that you mentioned like you were a student for a while. And so I got to interact with the Speaker Lab. And again, you and I are good friends. And so we talk. And so my assumption would probably be like, yeah, you know, they're good people. And then at a very, very last minute, invited you to come to one of our team retreats. And you came. And I think for you, it's kind of like, okay, now I get it. You know, I got to taste it and experience it and realize like, oh dang, like there is something different here. There is something special here, and makes you, you know, like, okay, I want to continue to invest in here and be involved in here and lean into this. And so, I think a lot of that is, you know, it's very intentional, and a lot of it, comes from just hiring and working with great people like yourself. You know, like when you get good people together, then naturally like good things come out of that, you know, and people are, aligned and around the same goal and purpose and mission of what it is that we're doing, and you enjoy the work that you're doing and you enjoy the people that you're working with, like good things tend to happen.
Yeah. I mean, it's no different than a sports team, right? Nick Saban or whoever, just making sure like we have for them, it's the competitive people that fit this, the right people on the bus and the right seats, as he says, correct, and the other people off. For you, as it's grown, you've obviously been further and further removed from some of the people, right? You've got, you know, assistants, Joan, you got people that are kind of gatekeepers, we'll say, as every leader does, a lot of the leaders listening to the show. How do you continue to maintain the pulse check on the community and really the people, the culture, having further and further been removed from a lot of the day-to-day operations?
Yeah, that's a good question. We've got, so for context, we've got about 40, 45 team members now. And again, I live here in the Nashville area. We've got, I believe two people in the Nashville area, but everybody else is all over the map. And so, yeah, there are times where you're like, what's everybody doing? You know, like I can't see everybody, nobody's coming to an office. So you can't see anybody on any given day to kind of wonder what people are up to. Because when you are, when you see people, you can also kind of keep a pulse on like, maybe I didn't have like deep interaction, but I just kind of get a sense of like body language. Are they doing okay? You know, are they, how's life going? Are they frustrated with their role? Are they, things going well? Like you just lose out on a lot of that, just even kind of like water cooler, personal, just kind of hanging out stuff. And so there is an intentionality there that you have to do. So a few things I do is, one, I rely heavily on our leadership team. So Jake, as you know, we've got a leadership team, myself, five others, and they have their own teams and departments that they lead. And so I'm checking in with them regularly of, hey, what's the pulse on your team? How are you doing? You know, is there anything that you need from me? So that's a big thing that makes a big difference. The other thing that I do is, like, we rely, as you know, heavily on Slack, and Slack is a great tool for us of just kind of DMing people, checking in on people, seeing how people are doing. Another thing that I do is once a quarter is I will do one-on-ones with everybody in the company. And so we were talking before we started recording here that I had six of those this morning. And so these are none of these people I talked to were direct reports. These were each 20-minute calls, just back to back to back to back. And it's just like, we talked a little bit on work stuff, but a lot of it was just kind of like shooting the breeze and like, hey, what's going on? Hey, you know, I remember you telling, you're planning on moving or whatever came of that. Or I remember your son was sick. Is he doing better? And it's just kind of like catching up on life type stuff. And so that's one thing I try to do, again, a couple times a year with everybody in the company, is just that one-on-one Zoom call of just to shoot the breeze. And I've had multiple team members who said, I've worked at other companies before. I never interacted with the CEO and I never got to have any interaction there. And, you know, the fact that, you know, you would want to have a call and catch up and like be genuinely interested means a lot. And so I think that, you know, stuff like that helps me to kind of keep a pulse on people and kind of get a read on people on. And then also, again, like I said, talking with our leadership team and getting feedback from them on the pulse of people.
So you mentioned Slack. And so we've got, I mean, you have emails, we have texts, calls, Slack, Zoom, everything. How do you set the standard on prioritizing, like, here's the channel, here's the expected return time? Like, how did you start to figure out that? Because some people listening are like, well, we don't use Slack. Is that something I need to add in? How do I use it? It just seems like I'm getting another text message source. There's some things I see that I'm going to sprinkle in afterwards, but I want to kind of hear your thoughts on designating different channels for different priorities.
Yeah. So Slack is, there's a lot that you could do with it. And so at this point, you know, we've got 45 something people in Slack and a bunch of different channels, a bunch of like group conversations, a bunch of, you know, here's these three or four people that are going to spin off, kind of talk about this one thing. Slack can be really, really good for, think of it like big text threads, where you can kind of interact and dialogue on certain subjects or topics. I find it easier and simpler to navigate and use than email. So I personally actually get surprisingly very little email. And I don't do a ton with email. And so, internally within the company, we just don't do a lot with email. It's just rare that I'm sending emails to team members. So pretty much everything lives and breathes within Slack. Slack and also allows opportunities for adding, you know, like one of the things that you've seen that we do a lot with adding pictures or videos or links or memes or GIFs and, you know, just funny kind of stuff to kind of sprinkle in and kind of stuff that may kind of humanize things and makes themselves a little more lighthearted than what email might be able to do. And so, you know, Slack's really good in that sense. As far as like communication, I think, again, everybody's going to be a little bit different in terms of like their speed of responsiveness. Responsiveness is a big thing within the company. And so, you know, I've told team members before, when you're responsive, when you're not responsive, I don't know what's happening on the other end, you know, which again is another challenge of just being a virtual company is, let's say that I send some type of message and I'm looking for a response or some feedback and it takes someone a day, you know, or 2 days to respond. Like, I don't know what's going on the other end. You know, maybe they're like, maybe they read it and they're just thinking about it and they're like, I'll get back to you. But like, I have no clue. I have no idea. You know, did they even see it? Did their settings or their notifications get messed up and they never even saw it?
And you fill the void with your story of what's going on.
Absolutely. Yeah. Which is very real things, you know, in virtual companies is you can't see what's happening on the other end. You know, other things that we have to be aware of is you may send something out that's not necessarily like, like loaded or strong or mean or hostile or anything, but it's just, you know, some type of, you know, if you're providing some type of critique or criticism, toward someone, like that can get lost massively in translation. Or maybe you're just saying something as just an observation and someone's reading way more into it than what is there, you know, and it just gets, again, lost in translation. So those are real things, are real issues within virtual company and especially via like text communication. And so that's other stuff we just have to be aware of, like when we are talking and interacting with one another, of giving people the benefit of the doubt. You have no idea what's happening on the other end of the screen. We also do, as you know, like we do these team retreats usually once a year or so where we can get together in person. That really humanizes things. Cause now I have I was talking with a team member this morning and they said, we just had a team retreat a couple weeks ago. And I was asking, you know, if there's anyone that really stood out to them or they got to hang out with. And they said, this particular person really impressed me because all of my interactions with them in Slack, I felt like it was like we were off. We weren't on the same wavelength. And then I got to hang out with them in person and like it really clicked and it changed things, you know. So the in-person time helps to kind of amplify and give some context to people when you're then communicating virtually.
Yeah. Okay. So two things on Slack that I want to point out, and I'm curious the origins, if you had a hand in this or someone else, the things I really appreciate, the Monday morning, like weekend dump check-in, yep. Where people share kind of what they did the weekend, pictures, and then tacos.
Yeah.
Like those I think are really important to the culture that you've built. And so I'm curious kind of the origins for them for people listening that what could their spinoff own version of the tacos or the Monday morning check-in be for their virtual teams?
Yeah. So to add some color there, Monday morning, one of the things we do in Slack, and I think we've done this for a while, is if you're going to an office, and it's been a long time since I went to an office, but typically if you go to an office on a Monday morning, you're kind of just catching up with your coworkers, you know, just kind of getting that water cooler break room of like, what everybody do this weekend? You know, what'd you get up to? And that sort of thing. And you're just kind of comparing notes on it. And so like, you just don't see that in virtual companies. Like I come to my office in my house and I sit down and I start working. Like I'm not talking to anybody in person or kind of catching up or making small talk. And so you kind of just lose out on some of that personal touch. And so we started doing this a while ago where Monday morning, someone in the company will just kind of post like, hey, what everybody do this weekend? And not everybody will post, you know, what they did. And there's a lot of weekends they're like, it was a boring weekend. I slept in and I played with my dog.
I posted donut this week for you. I want you to know that.
Well done. There you go. And like, there's sometimes where it's just like, there's nothing really to share, but usually I'd say, I don't know, half, maybe 2/3 of the team will post some pictures of, oh, here's something I did with my kids, or here's a trip I just went on, or, you know, here's something me and my spouse went on a date, or, you know, whatever, you know, just those type of thing. And again, it just kind of like humanizes it. It just makes these personal connections of like, oh dang, I never even realized that this person was into this type of food, or this, they have this hobby, or, oh, they just saw this movie. I saw that movie too. And now we have like something that we can kind of connect on or talk about. So that's been really powerful, is just everybody. So Monday morning in Slack, as you've seen, like it's just a dump of a ton of pictures, videos, random things that people are getting up to. And so it just, again, kind of like brings people into your human life of what life is like on the other side of the screen. The other thing that you mentioned there, tacos, this was started a few years ago where, again, in a virtual company, you kind of lose some of the personal interaction of working with other people and kind of like even just acknowledging other people. Hey, I really appreciate your help on this, or you did a great job on this. Stuff that may happen like in the hallway, or let me just poke my head into your office or something. But also we, you know, one of our three core values is people. Like we really value people and we want to make sure people feel acknowledged and appreciated. And so one of the things that we started was there within Slack, there's this third party plugin tool called Hey Taco. And the premise is, it sounds super corny, but it works, is that you give like the taco emoji as kind of a shout out to other people. And so you can collect tacos, you can redeem tacos, but the premise is basically in our shout outs channel, we have a shout outs channel in Slack, and people will go in there and like, hey, I want to shout out Jake. You know, Jake did awesome on this recent cohort and training that he did, and I just want to acknowledge Jake, right? And so what will happen is then you have within Slack, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Jake, but on any given day, there's 20, 30, 40 messages, individual messages from people just shouting out other people within the company, sometimes within their department, sometimes totally unrelated to the department. But it would be rare for a week to go by that every person in the company didn't get some type of shout out from someone. And there's no like rhyme or reason or system. There's no like flow chart where, okay, now you have to do this on this day and for this many people, and here's who you need to acknowledge. It's like, no, it's like, it's purely organic. And it's not necessarily mandated, but I'm intentional on it a couple times a week. I'll go in there and I'll post things. And just again, to acknowledge people and have an intentional outlet to do that. And so it's, it's cool. Anytime, myself included, when someone shouts me out and I read that, I'm like, oh, that feels good. You know, like someone acknowledged that I'm working hard, that I'm doing a good job at something. And so I think that that's cool whenever your teammates are acknowledging you that like, hey, you're doing great at this. And so having a medium or an outlet to do that within Slack has been a big win.
Yeah. One of the things I want to recognize you for as well, that you do really well on Slack, is weekly, and you pass it to some of the leadership team at some points, but dropping in a post, almost like what you would typically send out in an email newsletter from the CEO, but it's a much more personalized, here's something to think about, here's how it aligns with our core values, here's something to keep focused as we get into the week. And so that helps set the tone as well within there. There's two things you mentioned, or one thing you mentioned and one thing I want to go back to. You talked about people being one of the core values. At which point were you building this virtual company that you were like, I actually need to put some core values to paper? Like, I know what I stand for, I know what I want us to be about, but I can't just live it up here in my head. I've actually got to be better about distributing it out to others. Where was that kind of point? And then what was the process to really establishing those core values?
Yeah. So early in the business, like we were a couple of years in, and I think at the time, just had contractors, and we first started kind of talking about it. This is something that I knew, like, all right, I see other companies do this. Maybe we should be doing this. This is something, but also some of it felt like maybe we should be doing this, but also through the lens of, it's just good for clarifying for the team, for myself, you know, like what are the things, like what is the lens that we make decisions and how we kind of process things. And so our three core values are people, ownership, and growth. And at the time we had our leadership team, we had, I don't know, three or four of us. And we just spent a lot of time just kind of like whiteboarding ideas of like, what matters to us? What would some of those key things be? You know, you're just kind of throwing some things against the wall. You're looking at other examples of companies you admire and respect. Like, how do they do core values? You know, should there be a couple? Should there be a dozen? You know, is this something people would memorize? Is this a single word? Is this, you know, a sentence? You know, like there's just a lot of ways you can do it. So I don't know that there's necessarily a right or wrong way to approach it, but I think it was just something that we, once we kind of landed on those three core values of people, ownership, and growth, we've got like a couple sentences that go along with those, but I'm confident, you know, Jake, correct me if I'm wrong, but like, I'm confident you could ask anybody in the company what our core values are and they could tell you what they are. Because it's also like for a lot of companies, it's like, you know, when on onboarding or orientation, like, oh, here's our core values and here's our mission statement. And like, you just never hear about it again. Yep. And it's just kind of lost in the ether, but we beat that drum a lot. All of our tacos are tied to that. Like a lot of times when we're giving shout outs to people, again, this isn't just me, this is within the company. A lot of times people are leaving like a hashtag related to one of those core values. You know, I want to shout out you, 'cause I noticed like you took really good ownership in this situation. And, you know, and so we're we're connecting shout outs and two core values. And here's things that I see that you did a really good job with this, or I saw how, you know, I see how you're growing personally as a person and, you know, and how you're taking ownership in that. And like, again, can I connecting the dots back to that? So it's definitely something like our core values, our mission, like are things that we talk about a lot internally to keep it top of mind for the team.
Yeah. I love just that. And for anybody listening, like that's one of the things we talked about in my last book or my newest book, Lead Better Now, is the idea of praising process and the importance of getting into the habit of praising things within people's control and especially where it aligns in value. And so that's, Grant's just given an awesome example of that. One of the things I last want to wrap up with for maybe our business owners, our entrepreneurs on here, you did something a few years ago that literally blew my mind. So Mike Michalowicz, we know, author, wrote Clockwork. And the idea is like, as a business owner, taking a full month off of your business, no emails, no nothing related to it, and then coming back to it. And I remember when I first read the book, I was like, that is the most terrifying thing I've ever heard in my entire life. And then I'm chatting to you one day and you're like, oh, I've done it. Yeah, we took some time off completely, no nothing, and came back and everything was fine. Mentally, one, how did you get yourself in a position to completely unplug and trust the people you left in charge to not burn the building down, yeah, for lack of a better phrase?
Yeah. So at this point, I've done, I think, 3 1-month sabbaticals, and 1 month meaning like completely offline, didn't go to meetings, didn't check Slack, wasn't getting emails. Like I was off the grid. And so, yeah, I think the first time we did that, it is kind of like intimidating, daunting. I think it was, you know, Mike's, a friend of both of ours, and, his book was definitely influential. I'd seen, Michael Hyatt had done it. He's someone that I follow and look up to. And so I'd seen some people do it. And I think like oftentimes when people think about sabbatical, they think in terms of, almost like in a negative kind of
setting, like in a mountain.
Yeah. Like this, negative connotation of you're just, stressed or overwhelmed or burnout, or I got to go find myself or whatever, you know? And again, you know me pretty well. Like I'm a pretty low key guy. The highs aren't too high. The lows aren't too low. My stress level's pretty low. And so I never just felt like, oh gosh, I got to get out of this. I got to get a break. It always just came from a place of like, if we're going to build a business that's not dependent on me, then the sabbatical is kind of a stress test on the business. Like, let's take me out of the equation and let's just see what works, like what doesn't work, what breaks, you know, how people make decisions. Like, I could certainly come back and it'd be like, crap, that didn't work, you know, at all. Or come back and be like, oh, dang, that, you know, you guys did a good job. And so the first time around, it was definitely, I wouldn't say.
Did you do the full month out of the get-go, or did you like scale, hey, I'm going to start with like 2 weeks and then 3 weeks?
No, like we did a full month, but also like, I'd take a couple trips throughout the year. And so there are some trips where like, hey, I'm going to be gone, but like, I'll kind of check in on stuff. And other trips where like, no, I'm, you know, the next 6 days I'm offline. And so, yeah, there's like these mini trials throughout things. But yeah, a lot of this comes with like making sure that you just, you have good people that you can trust. And if you don't have those people, then like, why are they on the team in the first place? You know, if you can't trust your people, like, what are you doing? And so I remember the first time I did it, the team had to text me one time because they couldn't get logged into something and they couldn't find the password, you know? And I was like, okay, well, if that's the main thing that goes wrong, great. And I found that each time I've done it, that coming back, that the team is actually like incredibly grateful of like, dang, I felt empowered. I felt like you legitimately trusted me. They didn't feel like I was micromanaging or going like, hey, I'm going to go hide behind this curtain, but really I'm going to keep checking in and, you know, try to be this puppet master behind this, the behind the scenes pulling strings. Like, it just wasn't like that. So I remember another time I did one where I came back and one of the our team members on the leadership team said, we missed you, but we didn't need you. And I was like, that is where you want to be as a leader is, you know, we could tell you are here. We kind of missed it, you know, just in terms of like your presence, but like functionally we felt empowered. Like, we made decisions. We knew what we needed to do. And so I think it just makes the business healthier, which again is counterintuitive. Like, a lot of business owners, CEOs, entrepreneurs who may be listening to this think like, you have to do everything. You have to make every decision, and you don't, you know, again, you're creating, your own job there. And if you want to build a business, something that is sustainable and not built upon you, then you have to trust other people. You have to rely on other people. And whether it's a week long vacation or a month long sabbatical, it forces your hand to allow other people to step in and be the leaders that they're probably capable of being, but maybe they just haven't had the opportunity. So, yeah, I've done it every other year up to this point, and we'll probably keep doing it. I think again, it's a good litmus test for the business.
Love it. Love it. Great, man. This has been fun, dude. Where can people go to find out more about Speaker Lab if they're one of those people like you and I were years ago wanting to get plugged in? And I know you hang out a little bit on social. So where should people follow you?
Yeah, I don't do a ton on social, as you know, but very, very little. So yeah, the best place is thespeakerlab.com. Thespeakerlab.com is where everything lives. If you listen to this podcast, you probably listen to other podcasts. So definitely check out the Speaker Lab podcast. We've got close to 500 episodes there. Jake's been a lovely guest multiple times. So definitely check that out. Also got the book, The Successful Speaker, 5 Steps for Booking Gigs, Getting Paid, Building Your Platform. So if you want to know how to find and book gigs and dig into that more, there's some definite stuff there. But yeah, if there's anything I can do to help support you on virtual company or any of that stuff, holler anytime. Happy to help.
Dude, appreciate you.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Compete Everyday Podcast. To get in touch with the team, drop us an email to podcast@competeeveryday.com. And to find out more about our resources, content, and gear that will help you build that winning mindset so you better compete for your best life, visit competeeveryday.com.